Hello everyone! Welcome to another IT Career Talk with IT professionals, and today I have a Head of Systems Security Engineering. But before we begin, please don't forget to hit that subscribe button. My guest today is Mr. BJ Edward Taduran. Sir BJ, hello!
Hello, good evening to to you, Rafael. It's a privilege to be here, and good evening to our listeners.
Right. No. And so let's get into it, Sir BJ. What is a head of systems security engineering?
Yes. Yeah, so there's that keyword there, systems. You can replace that with infrastructure. So in an IT system or in a security type of work, you protect sometimes in a layered approach. Like you need to think of data layer, application layer, endpoint, which are the servers, the laptops, uh-huh. and also the network layer, you know, where the data are being exchanged,
right.
And also the perimeter layer where it the part of the system that is exposed to the internet. Uh-huh. So our part is as an infrastructure security personnel is to govern the endpoint to the perimeter part. So that includes also the network layer. So that's my job, to govern that, to provide security solutions for different business use cases, whether it's cloud or on-premise systems, and also if there are regulatory requirements there, especially there are a lot of those. Banco Central, for example, data privacy. So I need to ensure that on my scope, security is implemented as intended and required by these regulations.
Right. No. And what are the values and skills that you must have to be part of your department and also to head it? No, do you need to be like a level of certification? You need to be like, you know, because it's all about security, right? And a lot of security is vetted third party or industry, what do you call this, no? Assessment. So as a person in that field, what skills do you need to possess?
Glad you ask, Rafael, because I think in the industry, they're still a little bit confused on, I would say the security industry is still growing, mm-hmm. and they are still trying to put together the skills needed in this field. It's a very generalist field. Even if I'm in the infrastructure security, you can already see that we need to have an understanding of cloud technology.
Right.
Which is just, you know, we can say at the past 10 years is still growing, mm-hmm. and only the past 2 years it has been on this great inflection of buy-in and growth for all companies, right? Actually the past 5 years, but it was really a lot greater in the pandemic. So we also need to understand on-premise, mm-hmm. and we need to understand the if the audience understands about the OSI layer, I mean from the physical data, that's why you call it information security. Wherever information is going through physically, then it will go to the network. If you heard of switches, this type of devices,
right.
routers, yeah, right, and their connection to the operating systems and applications, you can just see that it varies a lot, the knowledge base that you need to go through. So skills wise yes, cloud certifications would be good. Data privacy or regulations in general, depending on your field. If you are in a card data industry, there's a card data regulation, they call PCI DSS. if you are in the financial industry, bank, or actually even digital banks, e-wallets, Banco Central, regulations, BSP, and if yeah, so there should be that compliance related skills. There's also that skills that you need to understand in terms of programming, mm-hmm. automation, and I think this is one of the least mentioned skill but very important in security: business acumen. You need to have an awareness and the ability on what are the risks, what are the stakes for the business of a specific decision. Because you do not marry security and functionality immediately. It's very hard. There are a lot of options, and you need to balance cost, you need to balance efficiency, you need to balance the available personnel. So just an example, if you heard of rape limit, if you lower down your rate limit, you might even the legitimate transactions, you might block them. Certainly you won't get you will be able to block DDoS like or I mean attacks that are giving a lot of transaction volume to your system. You will be able to block that, but if it is too large, your rate limit, that will be friendly to the hacker. So there's right. that balance that you need to every decision. So business acumen is also something that is very much needed for in this field that we have.
Right. And when you say rate limit, no, are there a certain SOP or standards that you divide that from? So for example, is it on a per IP basis? Is it on a per account basis? If you can share lang, no, if there's actually a, or is it like an overall company rate limit?
Yeah, that's a good question. There are certain it depends on your need, right? Mm-hmm. And depending on how your system interacts with your customer. So for example, there are choices. There are three different choices here. The first one is per IP, meaning for all the IP addresses or sources, sources right. that are going through to your system. This first choice, the system creates a reputation for each of those IP.
Right,
it sort of creates a DNA mm-hmm. for them. This IP is sending only up to 10 or 50 transactions in 3 minutes.
Right.
Once it became times 5 of that, it will have a bad reputation because that's not the DNA of that IP.
Correct.
So it will be automatically blocked. So that's one choice per IP. There's a second choice per context, or I mean per endpoint. For example, registration endpoint. For example, you have rafael.com/registration. Probably there's you can say, because this podcast is so famous already, you'll probably have 100,000 hits on the registration, but on the slash payment, rafael.com/payment, you only have 10,000. Right. Sometimes in endpoints like those, registration or payment, the distribution of transactions per IP differs. Mm-hmm. For like if you have an event, you will probably share one Wi-Fi,
right,
and everyone will be connecting to that Wi-Fi, right?
Correct.
So you don't want to do per IP, or else you will block that one Wi-Fi that is being used by many in your event.
Right.
So in that case, you will need the second type, which is per context or per
sure.
per yeah. So generally, that's the main two types for rate limiting options.
Right. No. And as you, as the head of systems, mm-hmm. are you still very much active in, you know, building these security systems, or are you more, you know, a manager in terms of, you know, evaluating the systems themselves? No, and basically, I wanted to ask, like, you know, how in touch or like how hands on are you on the system itself, and what systems do you usually write the scripts themselves, or is it like, you know, other people will have to present you and you will be the one to review?
Right. A mix of both. Yeah, still. So the past 2 years, I'm heading 8 people, mm-hmm. and our coverage is from the data security up to the infrastructure, data application and infrastructure security.
Right.
And on that part, I'm more of a strategic leader. I don't do a lot of I do a lot of reviews, a lot of decision making, a lot of unblocking tasks, a lot of being a scrum master, stand up meetings, roadmap, creating roadmap for the team and ensuring that metrics are done. So no taking care of the careers of others, but no coding, no technical individual contribution work yet. But right now, starting January, I shifted to focusing on infrastructure security.
Right.
Just because the work are just a lot. Yeah, so I have to do some stuff, specifically with perimeter security. Mm-hmm. So the one I mentioned a while ago, that's rate limiting. The reason why I'm a little bit updated, even with the technologies out there, what technologies or solutions that can do what I've just mentioned, because I research it, I was the one really did the nitty gritty stuff and even the testing, everything. But I'm kind of doing both now. The strategic part. So I'm a supervisor, associate manager-ish, and at the same time trying to finish some of the items from a technical part if I have the time. Yeah.
Right. No. And as you mentioned, as a supervisor, no, how do you describe your management style? No, to the team that you manage.
Okay, they mentioned that you can be. I'll just approach it this way. You can be one of these three types: autocratic, democratic, and laissez-faire. Right? The laissez-faire is like you delegate more. You don't do much of the decision. The autocratic is that all of the decisions should go through you. The democratic ones is you ask the opinion of everyone and then you incorporate it before coming up with your own decision.
Right.
Yeah, 60% I would say I'm a democratic type of leader. 30% laissez-faire. Mm-hmm. It's important also to delegate the decision making to see the maturity of the people you have, and it's good for their growth. And there are a few times that you are pressed to make a decision, especially immediate deadline, emergency from top management. So that part, you need to be a little bit autocratic as well, especially on confrontations, on things that you already have proven to be good to the company, but you need to fight for. Yeah, you need to be autocratic on that point.
Right. No. And with your department, you know, I'm pretty sure your team will have to deal with, you know, perhaps maybe attacks or, you know, sudden spikes. How do you deal with this unexpected events? Like, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, how can you sleep at night, no? Thinking like, oh no, what will happen? How do you deal with that?
We're jaded already.
Please elaborate.
Yes. So maybe to some, this is just an example, right?
Yes. They have a saying, kasi, diba, the paranoid, parang, they're saying the paranoid survives, right? So
yeah,
is that true? Do you need to be a little bit paranoid to be in you know, the systems security engineering, or how is that
paranoid to a level that you can still contain or you can still think clearly, right? Some actually, that's correct. Some people even go as far as saying it should be a skill, being paranoid in security. I don't know if you have this personality, being compliant, meaning you are able to see the gaps, very little gaps, and see the you should not be too positive on anything when you're in security. That's what they said. So for your questions, like how do we deal with that sudden change of the situation? Somebody's attacking, somebody has brought down our servers, even captured our servers as farm for bots, you know, using our machines to attack other companies. So the other companies see our servers, our machines, as the enemy, even if we were just used by others, right?
Right. That's
very possible, no? And those things are very common right now kasi, I don't know, once people get educated, sometimes they go to the dark side. So right. That's all I can say. So on those moments, I would say this is where a lot of companies fall short. They really need to have a specific team just focus on responding to those. They call it Security Operations Center. But the job of that department is really to respond to incidents. That type of responding is very intricate. You have that forensic side, you have that threat intelligence side, and you have that, it is also a 24/7, So if you don't have that, you will go all over the place in looking for clues. Right, yeah, right. But with this team, they already know how to isolate it, the problem. I think in IT, normally if you're coding, there's a bug and you will isolate it. You can see that this one is like not only a bug in the system, but a bug controlled by another person. It also has an intelligence. I remember one time that we already stopped this attack from a specific country, right? But suddenly, in just a matter of minutes, he just transferred to a different country and attacked us from there. So you really how to deal with it? You really need to have those people who knows how to respond and are experienced on this side.
Right.
Yeah, but generally, if you don't have that, because a lot of companies still don't have that, you will succumb to the hackers. You know, this is what's happening to ransomwares, to those who are doing bot. Yeah.
Right. So it seems to me, you know, number one is you really should be prepared for it and you should invest in it, no?
Yeah, that's very
based
good.
On what you mentioned, no? And I would assume you would also do things like, you know, game days or parang simulations. So that you can prepare, no? Parang fire drill baga.
Red teaming, blue teaming.
I see, right, no?
Yes.
Right. So siguro, let's go back a bit and understand how you got into, you know, security and even how you got into IT in general. How did you pick this this field, no? Was it, for example, hey, I wanted to be maybe mix ba to? Parang I wanted to be a police and at the same time I wanted to be computer and parang na ano mo, no? Nung bata ka or what? So how did it start, no?
I won't say I'm passionate about this one. I really don't know that I will be going to security. So for those who are listening here, there's no one-way path going to security. Yeah. But I'll just tell my experience as it is.
Yes.
So I'm an applied mathematics major in college.
Right. Well, so it's not even, well, I don't know if it's considered IT in your school, but
yeah, it's not.
Doesn't seem like it's IT, no?
Yes. It's one of the major in the mathematics department. Mm-hmm. So you have pure math. Ours is BS applied math. So we only have, I think, 3 programming subjects, mm-hmm. right? Anyway, but during my graduation, my major is not in demand during that time. Right. So I looked for other things that are within my skill. Mm-hmm. So it's not always, you will find yourself that what you have studied is sometimes not exactly applicable immediately. But I looked for some of the skills that I've developed, and I know I was a little bit excelling on programming.
Right.
So I applied to companies, especially for companies with boot camps mm-hmm. on programming. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I started with that. And I had 12 years of experience in software engineering. Mm-hmm. I would say I really enjoyed it. I more than half of that, I became tech lead for agile teams. And so I will get to the part on how I get to security.
Right.
In the IT field, at least in my experience, security is not taught on boot camps immediately. So there's this just one person that I would consider very passionate on security. I remember just the surname Glovatsky.
Oh.
So a very from and then he influenced me 6 years into my software engineering. I remember studying the book Hacker Exposed, created by Google during that time. So I began to, my curiosity and passion was steered by that experience. My entrance to security though is a little bit unorthodox. I didn't like jump into security because, you know, I have a family to provide for. I have and the company relies on me as a tech lead in IT, agile team lead. Mm-hmm. So they will not really put you to security where they don't know your value yet. There are you're not proven mm-hmm. on that field. What happened was, I was just, I would say this is about customer obsession. Mm-hmm. I just know that some of our customers are being hacked.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. But the company thinks that it was just fraud. Like the customers were just giving their credentials. Mm-hmm. That's why money is being stolen from them. But I studied closely from the support tickets that there were just only a few parts of our website or of our application where this complaints are coming from. So I investigated and tried to do payments on that. Anyway, I discovered that there was a security bug. I presented that to the security head. There was one security head in our company. That was, you know, if you have one security head and you have more than 100 staff, that's already
in proportion
a red flag. Already a red flag. That there's no enough buy-in for security in the company. I shared that to the security head, or I mean the one person, and he asked me to share it to the whole company. Like I was in a town hall,
right.
shared the bag. So I demonstrated it, and they saw with their own eyes that I was able to steal the money. Of course, it was a
white hat.
They are test accounts.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, they are test accounts, of course. Yeah. But after that, suddenly the top management buy in on security change. We will create a team. Because of that security flaw, we found out that it's not only present on the payments page, which are, you know, three parts of the, it was present everywhere. It was like a disease of the application.
Right.
Now they saw that we're losing hundreds of thousands of dollars. Now they know they have a budget for security. Mm-hmm. so they created a team, a security team. I think the member was 8. That's how the mindset has suddenly changed. And they wanted me to go to that security team. And it took time because, again, I was leading a team.
Correct.
It took time for me to get the transition. But after I got into that role, the rest is history. I had a lot of experiences, and I would say until now, 6 years in, or almost more than, or 5 years in, I'm enjoying the work, and yeah, that's how I get to security.
Right no. And Sarah, if you can share, like, the what are some of the common difficulties working with, let's say, maybe traditional developers, no? Sometimes itong security, sometimes parang medyo ano siya, no? Parang indirectly, let's just say indirectly, no? Parang hindi na makalaban.
There's friction.
Yes. With some developers, no? Yung
right.
Yung, yeah. So how do you usually manage that?
Okay. There's so many thoughts and experiences, no? With this one. Okay. First and foremost, before you go to this developer teams, you already need to have a backup from a policy standpoint, and also from top management, like the CTO, meaning the leader of the
company.
The developers and the production teams are already campaigning for security and spreading security awareness. Because without that, there will just be arguments upon arguments. Mm-hmm. Because there will always be friction. There will be additional effort. There will be all those things. But one of the things that I would say I see a big difference in terms of approach towards development teams, I would say in general, not only development teams, is I would say you can have a classical approach, or you can have an empowering approach.
Right.
Maybe the classical approach.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So the classical approach is like a carrot and stick type of approach, right? Like we already have a policy. We already told you that you need to do input validation on all of these fields.
Right.
We already put a AWS WAF, for example. Mm-hmm. Segment your network, all of these additional things, right? And you need to submit evidence from to us that you have done all of this. So if they have done this, the classical way is that you will give them a reward, like a carrot, right? And then if they have they did something or they lack a control that you have recommended, you will reprimand them for that, or even put a negative score on their OKR. So definitely, you in that classical type of approach, you will get the right behavior, right? Because no one wants to be, but you will not get the love, the loyalty. If they can do a workaround, they will do that. They will do that.
They'll always try to find a workaround. No.
Yeah, they will always do that.
Para makalusot, makalusot.
And yes, exactly. So they will say, oh, we did already the input validation, pero yun pala, they only blacklisted semicolon, and thus they just copied that type of validation, even though the input you expected is just numbers. So they, right, you know, right, it's still not secured, but they just mentioned, oh, we already did the validation. Mm-hmm. So anyway, there's a lot of ways, but you, a classical type of approach is not a good discipline for information security. What people or development teams needs to hear from you is that you understand their pain, you understand their goals, you understand. So you need to come in, oh wow, even if they say, you know, we're exposing this server to the public, so by default, by policy, you don't do that. but the InfoSec should come in, oh, why did you do that, right? Oh wow, that's a good business goal, but if we stick to your plan, these are what are the potential risk and these are the potential losses. So someone who needs to explain that, that's why I'm saying business acumen is one of the skills needed by a security person, because he really needs to persuade people increase that value in conversing, because there's really that friction, that additional effort and load for security.
And it helps now because your background is, as you mentioned, you've been a developer, or at least a software developer or applications developer, quite some time, no? And so you understand their passion.
That's true. Yes, yes.
That's right. In terms of hiring, no, as a manager, you definitely want to expand your team. You are, you know, and as you mentioned, there might not be enough supply or basically skilled security engineers. So how do you build your team, or how do you hire?
Yeah, so there are three sources here. You can have that usual hiring, look at LinkedIn, and try to persuade someone who is not even looking. Because those who are good ones are normally not looking. Yeah, they're already hired. They are already happy. You know, the company is trying to make them satisfied. So, but there's also the second one. You can have someone internally in the company from a different department who wants to be in the security team.
Right.
Who probably have a big part of the skills already, like from the deployment engineering team or from the software developers. So that's also a third source, to be honest, is reverse brain drain. Reverse, I mean, from outside the country.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, from outside the country. So
importation.
Uso yan, yeah, that's true. And in security teams, we have to do that, because to be honest, Philippines is not that advanced yet. I mean, there are a lot of skills that are, I would say, India is good at, South Korea, Singapore, US, especially on compliance, mm-hmm. providing security solutions. Those things. So import, yeah. And of course, there's another one. We are a very general, information security is a very generalist group. You need a lot of skills. So if you don't have it immediately, you can source it out from a vendor.
Right.
So for example, the SOC that I mentioned a while ago, which is very much needed to respond properly on incidents.
Right.
There are vendors that you can get if you cannot get the proper personnel.
I see. Right. How about boot camps? No, even you mentioned when you fresh out of college, you were looking for companies that had boot camps. Do you see that maybe is security engineering a potential or possible to make a boot camp, or you believe, or maybe it's still better that they're experienced first before joining?
Yeah, that's the thing. Glad that you ask for this one. I'll give this privilege to your podcast, but I might not mention this ever again.
Right.
Yeah. You know, we need more schools here in the country that focuses on cybersecurity. And that's also one of the things that I plan in the future. Right, yeah. So, right. Yeah. Great. So I will not mention that again ever. Yeah.
No.
I don't want to jinx that. Yeah.
I mean, I think every specialized boot camps are very. I see a lot of growth there. I can see right now, for example, there's specialized boot camps on AI. Right. I think the last 2 years has been on that.
That's true. Yes.
Specialized bootcamp. So we might see that in the near future. No? Hopefully.
Yeah. Hopefully. I would encourage that as well. Any vehicle that will introduce the skills. Because a lot of the skills right now, even in information security or cybersecurity, are already out there. Mm. YouTube, there's a lot of resources. The thing that we lack are, it is not pushed as interestingly to the students in general. Maybe because there's a lack of support or school as well. I mean, unlike Singapore, Korea, US, they already have a undergrad, graduate school, and doctorate degree just focused on cybersecurity. But on our side, we have one in Pampanga and one in AFP, of course, the armed forces. Hmm. But other than that, there's really none. So I think we can do better. But definitely, those boot camps or there's a lot of competitions happening for related cybersecurity. Most of that who are thriving are college students or even those that became passionate from computer science who have not graduated yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah.
Right. At the moment, since a lot of us are remote working. No, that means in terms of surface area, no, or if it's a perimeter pa. Before they had a saying like
the
candy, no, from hard candy and tapos chewy center. Yung ito pa yung pre-cloud days, no, pre-internet days where you just have to make sure that the company premises is super secured and then inside parang okay lang, chewy lang, no, parang ganyan. But now that we are remote, no? How do you feel about remote? How has that, you know, either enabled or made your life different? I would say I'll use different na lang.
Yeah. So I mentioned a while ago I was in the perimeter security. Mm-hmm. So this is really part of my work. So immediately, on an enterprise perspective.
Right.
The budget on perimeter security soared.
So good for you.
Like the VP. I mean, I hope all companies have that type of budget, right? Or have that type of buy-in. Like, you need to add more VPN licenses, right? And also, you need... Before, all of your controls are just on your servers and you have extra controls on those that are exposed publicly.
Right.
But now you need to put all of those controls to your laptops. Mm-hmm. And there's that additional work of allowing remote admin work to the laptops of your employees whenever you need to troubleshoot. So it's really hard. I would say the cost of it, companies really needed to really shift to that type of thing. Before, most of the laptops or most of the machines are inside the companies or they are inside the private network. There are a lot of controls before it gets to those sensitive machines where people are processing data,
right?
But now once they disconnect from the VPN of the company, a lot of the information out there is because one manager disconnected from VPN and just connected to a public Wi-Fi, unencrypted. That's it. So it's a lot worse I mean, a lot more difficult, but people has to adjust. I mean, companies has to adjust. Right. So that's on an enterprise level. And of course, on an individual or hacker perspective, they are feasting right now. I would say there are a lot more targets. There are a lot, you know what they do right now? They just automate it, right? They brute force the IP addresses. Mm. They brute force the IP addresses, and there are more green lights that they see. When there's green light, there are more vulnerabilities on this IP now and stuff like that. So yeah, it's I would say a bad situation, but like anything else, we'll innovate probably. Right.
So I just have a last question. No? I'm gonna mix my two questions into one question. No? So, siguro my question is, you know, what is your advice to our audience on how to be successful, like you?
Wow. Maybe do not go my route.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I mean.
Because there's an easier route or shorter route.
No, it's a. There's a lot of many things that. You know, there's a depression stage. There's. You will have your own route, but just to answer the question, no. I think a good advice that I will say to everyone, wherever they are in their career, there are two. Types of thinking in terms of being successful in their career. There's the passion theory approach. There's also that excellence theory approach. I forgot the book. I read it with the I forgot the book, but maybe I can give to you, Rafael, the link. But the highlight of it is that a lot of us are taught by our parents in school to be passionate at what we do and look for our passion, right?
Right, right.
But 80 to 90% of us gets to a work that we see is not our passion, right? So the mindset is maybe this is not good for me, so I'll quit my job and just go to, I don't know, theater or unrelated field, or go to, let me try programming, or let me try medicine, let me study again. So these things we are doing, the problem with the passion theory, right? Sorry, you were about to say something.
No, I think, you know, that's totally true. You know, even in this video, right?
I've
asked
true.
People.
Yeah.
You know, what's your passion? No? Parang it's always the what's put down our throat. You know, follow your passion.
Yeah.
So that could definitely be one way. But let's listen naman the other one you mentioned, excellence.
Yeah, that's true. So I just want to, before I go to the second one, I just want to mention the pitfalls of passion theory.
Right.
We celebrate those who find their passion, and but it's really, there are really just a few people who do that, who are very successful in that. Sometimes you drop all of your investment on a specific field just because you labeled it is not your passion. And then you go to another field which you thought is your passion, but then you figure out maybe this is not really my passion.
Right.
No. I hope this rings a bell to a lot of you, because I tell you, a lot of the people I have handled had this syndrome, the passion theory syndrome. And it's really just self-awareness. The passion theory is keep your passion, like a good understanding of yourself, because it's good, but it's rare to find it and be successful with it.
Right.
Go to the second approach instead, or at least, you know, if you will balance the two side, lean on the second type of theory, which is the excellence theory. What the excellence theory is saying is that whatever is given to you, if at the very least it can provide for your needs and a little bit more, be excellent on that, on that part. Why? Even if it's not your passion, why? once you become excellent in that specific area, people will recognize you. People will appreciate your work. Your work will have value to the company. And you will feel happy with your work. You will be motivated to do more and discover more. And the last thing, in every field, once you become excellent, you will find the adjacent possible. Once that you are excellent. When I say adjacent possible, you will see the connection to other fields of, because you're already excellent in that area. So for example, IT, once you're very excellent in programming, there's a lot of adjacent possible. You can look for data science, you can look for security, you can look for adjacent possible. And then that's where you can insert your passion. Maybe, you know, in biology, I'm passionate about biology, but I'm in IT. But once you're very excellent on that, you can adjust that. You can add to your, yeah. So there's a lot of, there's a more sure way to being successful with the excellence theory rather than in a passion theory. Don't forget your passion, but be excellent first, then look for the adjacent possible for your passion. So that's my approach. That's from the people I have handled previously, that works best, and that's also what I find with other successful people. So even if you go to your passion, you still need to be excellent anyway. Yeah, so excellence theory, lean more on that rather than passion theory. That's my
right. No. Yeah. Thank you so much for those words, no? And audience, if you found the session very helpful, of course, feel free to leave a comment, no? If I was watching this right now, I would comment like, you know, oh, this actually reminds me of a show in Japan called, I think it's called The Professionals, right? No. And they spend lifetime mastering something so simple that we consider simple now, like for example, they're masters in pouring beer, no? How to make it the Whoa. Excellent foam, no? Like they really go for Wow. excellence, and then Wow. it transforms to perhaps their passion eventually, right?
And
maybe that's why, you know, Japan is a first world country, because I think, you know, when you say it out loud like that, I can't help but think of Japan, of their culture.
That's true.
No, na parang,
that's true.
Right? They say, you know, even the janitors, that they're so excellent. I'll change the word. No, not passionate. They're so excellent in their jobs that, you know, I will become the best janitor ever. Parang ganun yun
yung
mentality.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, so... thank you so much, BJ. No, do you have any last shout out or, you know, other things that you want to mention to our audience before we close?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for that. We're hiring in PayMaya. actually, there's a lot of positions, but specifically security team. Like I said, there's not a lot. There's always a lack of resources. So. Please apply. And then I also want to greet my sister in Japan, Alison, and also Rafael here in Pasig, and also my wife, Pao. Pao, I love you, dear. Thank you for giving me my water here just before the interview. So, thank you so much, Rafael. It's been a pleasure to be here and to be with this audience and to share and hopefully influence them. Thanks.
Yes. Thank you also. And I guess that ends our show. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
And of course, if you like our content, don't forget to hit that like button, subscribe button, and notification bell.